Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, we will conduct the question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star and then one. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. Now I'll turn the meeting over to your host, Ms. Elizabeth McFadden. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Cynthia. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining the Department of Education's webinar on rulemaking under the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, as recently amended by the Every Student Succeeds Act. My name is Elizabeth McFadden, and I am with the Office of the General Counsel here at Ed. I am joined by several of my colleagues here at the department. As Cynthia noted, we will be doing a brief presentation today, followed by time for questions and answers. After today, the presentation will be available on our webpage, and you may also submit questions to our ESSA mailbox. Before we get into the specifics of rulemaking under ESEA in particular, we wanted to provide a very general overview of the rulemaking and negotiated rulemaking processes. So, what is rulemaking? Essentially, it is the process through which a federal agency develops proposed regulations to implement a substantive policy or requirement, publishes the proposed regulations for comment by the public, and then based on those comments, issues final regulations. Here at the department, we develop and obtain public comment on proposed regulations by publishing them in the Federal Register, which is a government-wide publication that federal agencies use to publish notices and proposed and final rules. The document containing the proposed rule regulations that we publish is known as a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or an NPRM. There are several key elements of an NPRM that I want to go over very briefly. The first is that the NPRM will contain the actual draft of the proposed regulations that we are seeking public comment on. In addition, the NPRM will include a summary of relevant statutory provisions, as well as current regulatory provisions that relate to the issues being discussed. Also importantly, the NPRM includes an analysis of the economic impact of the proposed regulations. Essentially, this would cover what we anticipate the costs will be to regulated parties, as well as the benefits to the public and to regulated parties as well. And finally, a final element of the NPRM is the public comment period. We set forth the time period in which we will accept public comments on the proposed rules. Typically, that period is 45 or 60 days. Public comments are submitted through a government-wide website known as regulations.gov, and the NPRM will set forth explicit instructions on how to submit comments. Following the public comment period, Ed analyzes the comments and prepares final regulations that are also published in the Federal Register. Like the NPRM, final regulations also have several key elements. First, we'll summarize the comments that we received and respond to those. We'll also set forth the final regulations, including highlighting any changes we're making to the regulations as a result of public comment, and explaining those changes. We'll also update our analysis of the economic impact of the final regulations. In any rulemaking proceeding, we are always very interested in commenters' thoughts and additional analyses on economic impact. We take a close look at those, and we'll analyze those and take those into account in updating our final economic impact analysis. And lastly, the final regulations contain an effective date. specifically when parties must begin complying with the regulations. That effective date is typically 30 to 60 days after publication of the regulations. We'll also be talking today about negotiated rulemaking. So what is that? Under negotiated rulemaking, before we issue proposed regulations in an NPRM, we work with representatives of constituencies that are likely to be affected by the regulations to develop the actual regulatory text. Negotiated rulemaking is typically done through a series of meetings during which representatives of the various constituencies, often referred to as negotiators, work with ED to come to consensus on the proposed regulations. And we'll talk about consensus a little later on in the presentation. Those meetings are open to the public and the press and are typically facilitated by a neutral third party. Following the negotiations, ED publishes the proposed rules in an NPRM in the Federal Register and includes a defined period of time during which the public may comment on the rules. And then after the public comment period, as we've previously discussed, ED publishes the final regulations in the Federal Register. Now we're going to take a look at negotiated rulemaking under the Elementary and Secondary Education Act as recently amended. Under the statute, ED is required to conduct negotiated rulemaking if it chooses to develop proposed regulations regarding standards, assessments under Section 1111B2 of the statute, and the requirement under Section 1118 of the statute that federal funds be used to supplement and not supplant state and local funds. As we've previously discussed, following negotiated rulemaking, ED will publish an NPRM seeking public comment on proposed regulations in these areas. For other regulations under the ESEA, ED will develop proposed regulations without negotiated rulemaking and then will publish those in an NPRM for public comment. So how exactly does negotiated rulemaking work under ESEA? We will talk about what we've done so far in the rulemaking process, what the current status of the rulemaking process is right now, what we anticipate doing over the next several weeks and months, and then what will happen after the negotiations end. So thus far, the department has taken several steps to start the rulemaking process. Back in December, we published a request for information and notice of meetings in the Federal Register, asking the public for advice and recommendations on regulatory issues under Title I of the statute, and providing notice of regional meetings at which stakeholders were able to present their advice and recommendations on those issues. Regional meetings were held in January in Washington, D.C. and in Los Angeles, and at those meetings, stakeholders presented their viewpoints and input to us. We also received written submissions of advice and recommendations in response to the request for information, and those written submissions can be found at www.regulations.gov. In terms of where we are now, we received approximately 370 comments in response to the request for information. Those were in addition to the input we received at the regional meetings. Based on the feedback that we received on February 4th, we published another notice in the Federal Register announcing three things. First, we announced our intent to conduct negotiated rulemaking and identifying the areas on which we intended to develop or amend our regulations. We also announced the schedule for negotiations and solicited nominations for negotiators to serve on the negotiating committee. In terms of the topics for negotiation, in the notice, we identified that we were planning to conduct negotiations in two areas. The first is on assessments under Section 1111B2 of the statute, and we identified in the notice the several areas on which we were hoping to include the negotiations. These were nationally recognized high school assessments that are locally selected, the exception for advanced math assessments in eighth grade, inclusion of students with disabilities and English learners, and computer adaptive assessments. We also identified that we would conduct negotiations on proposed regulations involving the supplement, not supplant requirement under Section 1118 of the statute, and in particular noted that our interest in the methodology that an LEA or school district would use to allocate state and local funds to Title I schools to ensure compliance with the statute, as well as the timeline for compliance. We also identified in the February 4th notice the schedule for our negotiations. We are planning on at least two sessions of 3 days in March and April. The negotiations will be held in Washington, D.C., and specifically on March 21st to the 23rd, and then April 6th through 8th. We have also asked participants to plan for an optional third session at the end of April in the event that we think and the committee agrees that further negotiations would be helpful to reaching consensus and concluding the negotiating sessions. Finally, in the February 4th notice, we asked members of the public to submit nominations for individuals to serve on the negotiating rulemaking committee. Generally, nominating negotiators involves members of the public nominating individuals to represent certain constituencies that will be affected by the proposed regulations. The February 4th notice also identified those constituencies and laid out the information that we need when reviewing the nominations. We'll remind folks of this several times in this presentation, but as a reminder, nominations are to be submitted to us by February 25th, and the email address is listed on the slides. It's oese.essa.nominations@ed.gov. On this next slide, we'll look at a little bit more of the specifics about nominating negotiators. And specifically what the nominations should include and the constituencies to be represented. There are several key pieces of information that we need in the process of considering and selecting negotiators. Those are listed here as well as in the February 4th notice. So we need the name of the nominee, the constituency that the nominee represents, evidence of the nominee's expertise or experience in the area being negotiated, evidence of support from individuals or groups within the constituency that the nominee will represent, the nominee's commitment that he or she is available to attend all of the sessions and will participate in the negotiations in good faith, and the nominee's contact information. We've also listed here the different constituencies that we believe are will be most significantly affected by the regulations and that we are hoping to see at the negotiating table. Once Ed has received the nominations, we will select negotiators from the list that we compile based on the nominations. And our goal in selecting nominations is to allow significantly affected parties to be represented while keeping the committee of a size small enough to ensure meaningful participation by all members. We would also note that the statute requires that negotiators be selected from among individuals or groups that provided us advice and recommendations, either in written form in response to the request for information or testified at one of the regional meetings. We would also note that if a member of an organization provided a response to the RFI or testified, another member of that organization could be nominated and selected for the negotiating committee. The committee will also include at least one ED representative who will be the federal negotiator. Once we've selected the negotiators, we will proceed to notify them of their selection and confirm their participation. Negotiations, as we've previously noted, will begin in late March. Prior to the negotiating sessions, we will provide negotiators with materials relating to the issues, and materials from the negotiations, as well as the list of negotiators, will be published on our website. In terms of how the negotiating sessions work, at the first session, and typically this happens on the first day, the first order of business is mainly around housekeeping and the conduct of the business of the meetings. We'll be finalizing an agenda with the negotiating committee, as well as protocols that will govern the business and participation of members of the members of the committee. Once the agenda and protocols are agreed upon through consensus by the committee, the negotiations begin. During the time between sessions, ED will draft or amend proposed regulatory language based on the committee discussions and any tentative agreements reached at the meeting. So, as an example, if at the end of a particular session, the committee has agreed in principle on certain issues, ED will take the time before the next session to draft the language to reflect that agreement, send that out before the next negotiating session, and then at the next session, the parties will come back together to go through that language, make any further changes, and continue their discussions. The negotiating committee has a fair amount of leeway in setting up subcommittees to focus on specific issues that that the committee members think would be worthwhile of further thought or investigation. And so during the time in between sessions, oftentimes subcommittees will meet and develop alternative language or counterproposals that they will then bring back to the rest of the committee before the next session. And then those as well would be discussed by the full committee at the next session. In terms of the work of the committee and the goals of the committee, everyone will be hopefully coming to the committee with the goal of achieving consensus on proposed regulations. And what exactly is consensus? Although the committee on the first day of the sessions can decide on a different definition, generally consensus means that there is no dissent by any member of the negotiating committee. And under this general definition, no member can be outvoted. The absence or silence of a member at the time that a final consensus vote is taken is equivalent to not dissenting. There's also the expectation that all agreements reached during the negotiations are assumed to be tentative until members of the committee formally vote on the proposed regulatory language for a particular topic. If the committee reaches final consensus, we ask that committee members not withdraw their consensus for that particular topic, as ED will use that consensus-based regulatory language in the NPRM going forward. And only under very limited circumstances would ED depart from the language if final consensus was reached. If the committee reaches consensus on the regulatory language, We will then proceed to issue a notice of proposed rulemaking that will be put out for public comment and which will use the consensus-based regulatory language. Given the consensus agreement, it is expected that negotiators, and if applicable, their employing organizations, will not comment negatively on the consensus-based regulatory language. If the committee does not reach consensus, then there are several different steps that Ed will take. First, we'll determine whether to proceed with the regulatory process. And if we decide to proceed, we have the option of using the regulatory language that was developed during the negotiating sessions or developing new regulatory language for the notice of proposed rulemaking. We will also submit the proposed regulations to Congress not less than 15 business days before they're published in the Federal Register. During this period, Congress and its staff may provide comments on the proposed regulations, and we will then include and seek to address those comments in the public comment record for the NPRM. Following the negotiations, and if consensus is not reached, notification to Congress and allowing the congressional comment period, Ed will publish the notice of proposed rulemaking in the Federal Register. At that time, the proposed rules will be open for comment by all members of the public. We will consider the comments received by the close of the comment period in developing the final regulations. And then in publishing final regulations, we will include a summary and analysis of the comments, any changes from the proposed regulations, the final text of the regulations, and the effective date of the regulations. That concludes the substance of the presentation. We want to remind folks to submit their nominations to us by February 25th, 2016. The email address is listed here. Although we will be taking questions and answers for a few minutes after we finish, if folks are not able to get their questions in or have questions that come up after today's presentation, please contact us at essa.questions@ed.gov. Also, we have a very robust web page at ed.gov regarding the ESEA and ESSA, where there is a number of resources regarding the statute, regarding the regulatory process, and we encourage you to consult those as well as we continue with the rulemaking process and implementation of the statute. And Cynthia, I think we are ready for questions.
Thank you, ma'am. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and then the number one. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is needed to introduce your question. To cancel your request, you may press star 2. One moment, please, as we wait for the first question to queue up. Our first question comes from the line of Jeff Schimmering. Sir, your line is open.
Yes. Is the department in the materials that are going to be provided to the negotiators expecting to propose in draft form any actual regulations that the negotiators would work off of or regulatory options?
Thank you, Jeff. We have not yet decided on that in the form of the materials that will be going to the negotiators.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jim Kalmus. Sir, your line is open.
Yes, this is Jim Kalmus from Edge Consulting, and thank you for this presentation. Very helpful. Have you come up with a list of other issue areas or topics that would be subjected to rulemaking but not going through the negotiated rulemaking process?
Thank you for that question. The only parts of the law that were explicitly subject to negotiated rulemaking were the two that we are proposing to actually engage in negotiated rulemaking on, so supplement, not supplant, and the assessments, and another provision relating to standards which we are not proposing to engage in negotiated rulemaking on. The rest of the statute doesn't go through negotiated rulemaking, so we are still considering other topic areas in which we might go through the regular rulemaking process.
Do you have a timeline for that to occur?
No, we are still deciding internally and figuring out how to prioritize the various areas that, through the public comment period, people asked us to regulate on. So figuring out how to meet the various needs of the public seeking guidance in this area.
Okay. Just one more quick question. Then there's the whole issue of guidance that's issued by the department, which I guess is like another category down. Is there a schedule or plan to come out with guidance on any specific provisions?
Yeah, similarly, we are engaging internally in figuring out where guidance is most urgently needed, also looking across existing guidance documents to figure out what needs to be updated and what still works. Looking at the comments that we've received from the public. So still engaging in that process, but there will be more to come on all of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of HyperLarget. Ma'am, your line is open.
Thank you. I was curious. We just had the comments that were due on Title I. Do you know when Title IV comments will be, when you'll be doing those?
If you could hold on for 1 second, we'll be right back with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you again for that question. The RFA that we had published back in December did focus just on Title I, and that was in part due to the requirement under the statute for us to obtain specific input on Title I regulatory matters. We don't anticipate issuing a separate RFI on Title IV or other provisions, but we are very interested in your feedback and thoughts on Title IV as well as others. So we would suggest providing that feedback through our essa.questions@ed.gov web mail address.
So again, it's HyperLarger and the National Association of School Nurses. Simply sort of write our own feedback for Title IV.
Correct.
Okay. And is there a time frame that you're really looking for those in?
No, not really. As soon as you're able to get us the feedback, we will consider it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ma'am, right now we don't have any questions on queue. Once again, for the participants, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. We have another question coming from the line of Rachel Rich, and your line is open.
Yes, with regard to nominations, how should the nominees or nominators decide which constituency they should represent? For example, someone might be a retired teacher, member of a community group regarding education, or a participant in a Department of Education project.
So thank you for asking this question. I'm actually really glad that this has come up because in some of the nominations that we have gotten so far, people have not been as explicit as they could be around which constituency they're representing, which is almost in some ways the most important information to provide because otherwise it will be impossible for us to figure out how to seat the negotiating committee. So first of all, I will say that the nominee can be eligible for more than one constituency. So if you are a parent and a teacher, you could identify yourself as being eligible for two different constituencies. We wouldn't seat anybody as representing more than one constituency, but if you think you are eligible for the more than one constituency, you should identify all of the constituencies for which you think you are eligible. And then broadly, we would say supporting documentation will be helpful in this space. Some people submit resumes, some people submit statements of support, some people submit just their current job title and role. So any other information that you can provide that will show your eligibility for a particular constituency will be helpful. I think it's sort of a case-by-case.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Debbie Lecters, and your line is open.
Hi. I, too, want to thank you for the webinar. It was very useful. I know it's really early for you all to estimate timelines and that, you know, there are a lot of moving parts, but do you have some kind of a draft timeline with an anticipated date for issuance of final regs?
Thank you. At this time, we are still looking at timelines around the negotiations as well as not around the negotiating sessions. Obviously, those are established, but in terms of how the different timelines will all fit together, those are still under consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Right now, we don't have any questions on queue. Once again, to ask a question, you may press star 1. We have one question here coming from the line of Donna Wandry. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi, yes, I just had a question about the meetings themselves, the negotiation meetings. Are those completely closed door, or are there is there an opportunity for an observer's gallery?
Thank you. That's a really great question. There is plenty of opportunity for observers, so the meetings are open to the media and to the public.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Robbie Cooper. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I was just wondering if there's any preference to constituencies, you know, based on the fact that a lot of people are parents and they're also school board members. You know, they could cross various constituencies very easily. Would you give preference to people that are focused solely on the parent voice?
Thank you for that question. That is actually helpful that you brought that up because I should have made this clear when I said this earlier, even though a person can be eligible for multiple constituencies, you would only be seated as representing one constituency, and the expectation would be that the nominee would represent that constituency and that constituency only. I don't think that we have decided or would cut either way whether the person happened to also be eligible for other things makes you more or less likely to be on the committee. I was only offering that if you do want to provide multiple constituencies that you might be eligible for, but in being seated, each individual would be identified for one constituency, and our plan is to seat generally one representative of each constituency with an alternate.
I mean, could you see how that might raise problems for parent voices strictly because we're not, you know, we may not be teachers and other members, and we have very specific needs that wouldn't cross over, or our perspective is strictly a parent perspective. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
No, sorry, maybe I haven't been clear. We intend to seat at least one person at the table who would be a parent who would represent the parent voice and would represent no other constituency.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Julia Razovair. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi. I just had a question following up on something that was asked earlier about sort of the timeline on when all the regs and things will be out. And I think the follow-up answer was that it sounds like, you know, this will be kind of a rolling process, but I'm still a little bit unclear. Like, in terms of both the regulations, various guidance that will be coming, whether it's in, like, the Dear Colleagues letters and things like that, like, is there a timeline that you all will be putting out soon that will show states when they can anticipate different things coming from you so that they can get to work on planning?
Thank you for that question. So we are not going to put out a timeline, but we are definitely prioritizing things that require immediate answers and immediate decisions at the state and local level. We got a lot of questions through the comment period and also through our question email box, and are looking at things that anything that would require an answer or guidance or additional information from us this school year, those things have sort of risen to the top of our list. That's why we issued 3 Dear Colleague letters in the last 2 months. And we will continue to prioritize things that will impact this year as well as next year's transition year in the short term, just to make sure that people are getting the information they need to make decisions. But just to add to that, if there are particular things that you are concerned about that you think need immediate guidance, I would encourage you to flag those through the email box. The email box gets reviewed daily, and so those questions and concerns, if you raise them there, will get elevated.
Thank you, ma'am. Next question from the line of Rachel Rich. Ma'am, your line is open.
Yes. Are there funds for transportation?
Thank you for that question. That's a very good question. We'll need to provide a little more information about that in the coming days, but we don't have an answer right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question from the line of Heidi Barrington. Ma'am, your line is open.
Yes, hi, and thank you again for doing this webinar. It's been quite helpful. My question to you is twofold. One, can you please repeat the dates of the meetings? And also, if a nominee is elected, but will you also have it available in not just in Washington, but can they participate by way of Skype? And would the alternates be active participants as well?
Thank you. So in terms of the dates, the first session is scheduled for March 21st through the 23rd. The second session is April 6th through the 8th. And then we have noted the possibility of an optional third session, which would take place on April 18th to the 19th. So for the first two, those would be three-day sessions, and those are typically run from 9 to 5, and then April 18th through the 19th would be a two-day session. In order for the negotiations to really be as meaningful as possible, we would not be allowing negotiators to participate remotely and would need people to commit to being able to attend in person. And then in terms of, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, and I think you're about to answer about the alternatives.
Right. Yes, so we anticipate that alternates will have a role in the negotiations. Typically, the negotiating committee agrees on that on the first day of the first session as part of the protocols. But typically, alternates do have a meaningful role in the negotiations.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Ms. Sabia. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for this webinar. Very good. There is a question I have on the format in terms of submitting the nominations, especially around the evidence of support from others that is supposed to be provided. Is there a preferred way to do that? For example, statements, short statements of support embedded in the nomination, or attaching letters on letterhead? Is there a right or wrong way to do that?
There is no specific way, but I would say that it would be probably most helpful to lay out explicitly in the body of the email how you're meeting each of the different requirements and then attach whatever you think is supporting. I think it is more problematic when people just attach things and assume that we will look at the attachments and understand what the attachment is meant to support or point to. So if you go back to the, you'll have access to these slides. We're going to post them. And if you look at the slide specifically on what should a nomination include, you should make sure that within the body of the email you've addressed each of these bullets and then so explicitly state the constituency, for example, that you are representing, and then add supporting materials that will back that up.
So attachments are okay, but you could also put little statements from the groups that are supporting your nomination within the email. Either way, it doesn't matter.
That's right. As long as you make sure that you are explicitly addressing each of these bullets.
Right. You don't just attach. If you use attachments, say something in the body about it.
That's right.
Correct.
That would be great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jeff Shimmering. Sir, your line is open.
Hi, Jeff Shimmering again with Great City Schools. Can you give us some of the department's thinking with regard to how you're going to approach the selection of the negotiators and whether you're going to consider actual practitioners, or whether we're going to have a whole group of Washington advocates who would have a tendency to just want to re-legislate everything that occurred in ESA, as opposed to having state and local actual practitioners who can talk about how things work on the ground.
Thanks. That's a very good question. In terms of the negotiators, we are really looking for practitioners representing each of the constituencies. As you point out, folks who are at the state and local levels and really can bring to bear their experience and with both NCLB and their state and local contacts.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Ms. Williams. Ma'am, your line is open.
Hi. I have a quick question. Just to make sure, can you please go over the detailed negotiated rulemaking? Like, what will it cover specifically?
Thank you. So, We identified in our February 4th notice that we would be conducting negotiated rulemaking on assessments and supplement, not supplant, requirements. Further information about that is both in the February 4th Federal Register notice, and it's also on the slide deck that we've gone through today. And we'll be posting the slide deck on our webpage after this presentation, so folks should definitely feel free to go back and consult that as they have further questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Right now, we don't have any questions on queue.
Thank you, Cynthia. I think we're at time, and so I think we would like to wrap up. I'd like to thank everybody for participating today. We really appreciate everyone's attention and the really thoughtful questions that people have. Again, nominations are due on February 25th, 2016. And if you have additional questions following up on today's presentation or other questions about implementation of the law, please refer to the email address at the end of the presentation today. We're happy to receive your feedback and input. And thank you again for participating today.
Thank you, ma'am. And that concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.